This episode of The Local Wave is brought to you by The Sanctuary. If you're in a small band, you know how hard it can be to promote yourself. Well, I'm here to tell you that the guys at The Sanctuary want to help. They offer studio space where they create a full audio-visual experience for you to share with the world. For more information, check out sanctuarysessions.tv. Again, that's sanctuarysessions.tv. And be sure to follow them on social media at @sanctuary_sessions. This episode is also brought to you by Standard Gallery. Standard Gallery is a new online art gallery with a mission to make buying art less intimidating and more accessible to everyone. They partner with artists to help produce, market, and distribute their work. Learn more at standard-gallery.com. Again, that's standard-gallery.com.
What's up, Nashville? Welcome to The Local Wave, Conversations with the Nashville Underground. I'm your host, and my name is still Alex MacWilliam. This week, we've got an awesome oral history with Nashville legends, A Plea for Purging. When I moved down here in 2011, they were starting to end their career as a band, but it still felt like every time there was A Plea for Purging show in Nashville, it was this huge event, and I loved going to them, and I loved them back when I lived in New Hampshire, and it was just really cool to be able to sit down and talk with them about all the years being in that crazy band. A little bit of housekeeping stuff. As you know, the Patreon page is live. You can go to it at patreon.com/thelocalwave, and you can become a supporter of The Local Wave. Your money is obviously very important to you, and I am not trying to sit here and beg for your money or say you have to do something or whatever, but if you have a dollar or $5 or any amount, that would help quite a bit with our project here at The Local Wave. So again, that's patreon.com/thelocalwave. Thanks to everyone that reached out to me via Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at The Local Wave for the last episode with Aaron Sprinkle. That was one of my favorites so far. I had a ton of fun doing it, and Aaron was great. I hope to have him on again to get even more wild stories. Anyway, there's time for me to talk later. Let's get into this conversation with Andy and Blake from A Plea for Purging.
Tom York and A Plea for Purging. Same sentence.
Yeah. I'm just going to say it. I heard these fucking engineers talking about, can't remember exactly what studio, but they had one of those. I don't know what you call those, but they got a girl to put another fucking guy.
No.
You know, so they could hear it. And they ruined a microphone, I guess, probably, but when you got all kinds of money like that.
That sucks. But they just didn't tell anybody for a long time.
Could you use it afterward?
I don't know.
That sucks.
I feel like you probably still could.
I put a microphone in my mouth before and pulled it back out, and it still worked.
That's freaking gross.
A mouth and a vagina are both similar.
Yeah.
One's vertical, one's horizontal.
Jeez. Good Lord. Well, there's one way to start the podcast.
Yeah, it could be either way, yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know how to get you guys into a conversation. I just like what's going on right now. I'm just going to let you guys take it over.
Yeah. We're interviewing you. Yeah. That's what we should do.
Dudes, it's crazy to me, to my high school self, that I'm sitting here with the two of you.
Really?
Yeah. Andy, when I first asked you to be on the podcast, your reaction was no one's going to give a shit at all.
No one's going to care. You know? Yeah. But
I'm wrong. I was my mom will
humbled, humbled,
humbled,
humbled.
He was pummeled about it.
Yeah, I'm stoked. It's cool. It's neat.
Yeah. Well, you guys meant a whole lot to me. I was up in New Hampshire, and no one except for maybe me and the three other dudes I was in a band with knew who you guys were. Dang. I think.
We were huge in New Hampshire. How did that work out?
Yeah, right. I say most people don't know who we are.
We got the first ever EP because of this place called Club Drifters that my band used to play all the time. And apparently you guys played before. You were in the band. I don't think you were in the band, Andy. It was early.
New Hampshire. I don't know how we would have...
Dude, I bet.
The guy who owned it was named, ironically, his name was Christian because it was a Christian name.
I know what he's about to say, and I know the other.
And they bought all the merch.
Yeah. We were on tour with Once Nothing and Gwen Stacy. We're playing a show in, like, Ohio or something, so far away from New Hampshire. And Once Nothing and Gwen Stacy bail. And they say, we're not going to drive. And Plea had a rule when we started, like, we will never cancel a show. You know, everybody in the world wants to see us play. Whatever. Now, probably we're just like, we're never going to cancel.
We're not going to be that band. Yeah.
Because they canceled because of a snowstorm.
Yeah.
And it was really bad. We drove all the way through the snowstorm to New Hampshire. No one came. The venue owner bought us a bunch of food, bought a bunch of merch from us, like $100, $200, $300 worth of merch.
I do remember this.
And then, we just played this show for no one, for like his son or something.
But we were kind of pumped we did it too. We were like, it worked out. Cool.
Yeah.
And then your band got.
Well, he kept y'all's CDs. Like, just, you could just take them. Like, there was like 10 or 20 of them at the venue. And I used to go all the time, and my band only played at that venue pretty much. Like, we were like a Chariot knockoff, and we didn't even like provide him with lyrics or anything. We just told him we were a Christian band, and he was just like, yeah, you can totally play because you're a Christian band. And so he used to let us play all the time. He loved us for some reason, and so that's how I first heard about you guys, I think.
Had to be the CDs he bought from us. Yeah. He just gave away. Yeah. So it was the Eyeball one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the legitimate first deal.
I was on the tour, Andy, but not on the record.
Yeah.
Kyle. Is there cocktails, beer?
Sure.
I will totally take a beer if that's cool. Yeah. I love that. I like everything, literally.
Everything?
Yes.
Okay, I'll bring something down.
What do you like?
I want you to surprise me, whether that be a beer or a cocktail or anything.
I love slinging cocktails.
Your least favorite thing in there that you really are totally okay with giving away. We love crafty beer, good beer.
Cool.
I love it all.
What are you into?
I'm just water.
Just a water?
Yeah.
Right. He's a Christian.
Hey, if you do a cocktail, just know that I'm not super into rum.
Oh, I do. Whiskey only.
Okay, sick. Yeah.
All right, I'll be back.
It's the real deal. I'm not joking. He like makes cocktails every
really?
Time.
Really? I'm going to have to get one of those. Cool. Dang, I didn't know. He's a mixologist.
He did wrong.
Maybe that's number two. Maybe. We'll see. I'll pay you. National price, $15 a cocktail.
Blake owns Yazoo, so he can give you beer or three.
Yeah, that's how I found you guys. And then I discovered Zambui.com, which also led us to the birth of Dozer.
Andy used to own Zambui.
Yeah.
Sold it to Living Sacrifice, the band.
It's true.
And Puller, the band.
Puller was so sweet.
Do you know who that is, Puller?
No.
Oh, man. They're like an old Tooth and Nail band.
Yeah.
Back from the 80s.
The owner of Zambui was like in that band.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Bruce and then... some other dude.
That was like our lifeline to anything like related to what we did. Because the only times we ever got to go and experience like people who like the same kind of music as us is at that one venue, Club Drifters. But that was like 3 hours away from where we were. So we like lived off of all the Zambui videos and like Tooth and Nail and Face Down and all that kind of stuff. And so,
dude, that's how we found Andy. Like, not kidding. Like, when we started our band, this isn't a joke. I know we said a lot of really incorrect things so far as far as, like, facts, but this is for real. So, Aaron and John and I, when we first started the band, we had this guy named Justin that was, he did the first EPs on the first EP. But we loved, like the goal in our minds was to have a shirt design on Zambui. That was, like, the ultimate. Like, we made it. And so, we started watching the videos and saw Andy on there doing all the videos. We're like, that dude's awesome. And then Andy started coming to our shows. And that's when we kind of, like, hooked up with him, started to be buds or whatever. And then I kind of, like, tried to bully him to get in our band. And he said no first. Mm-hmm. And then, like, a year later, finally joined. But that's for real. Zambui was kind of, like, the lifeline for us starting our band, too. Like,
that's
it was
wild.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just living the dream on the internet.
Yeah.
On YouTube.
It's not on YouTube. Nothing's on YouTube.
Not anymore, yeah.
No, there's literally nothing. Like, there's no Zambui videos. There's no, like, silly Ryan Rado videos. They're all gone.
Yeah, Rado, too. I forgot about that.
They're stifling our voice. That's why I came here today. I will be starting Dozer videos on YouTube again.
Zambubi.
So you movie. And you started with Quick as the Word. That's the the first of Fish. Cool.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about that era of the band.
No, yeah, we do.
It's pretty bad.
We got to stay in a haunted house.
Yeah, we did.
That was cool.
We lived in a haunted house for 30 days.
Dang.
And
ate free Taco Bell.
Ate free Taco Bell every day.
For a whole month, yeah.
I'll try to make it make sense. We needed to get out in the middle of nowhere so no girlfriends would be around. Blake's family in Arkansas knew some guy that owned a house that had no utilities. It was just sitting there, and all the grass had grown up, like, all up to the gutters.
Right.
It looked abandoned.
They come in. It was, like, abandoned. They came in and bushwhacked all the stuff down and got electricity and water to it and let us live there for free for a month. And the guy owned Taco Bells, like two or three of them. So we got this card that said, you guys can eat as much Taco Bell as you want anytime you want. So we go to Taco Bell every day and eat way too much Taco Bell and write and record some songs in this weird, like, haunted, abandoned house. We thought there was all these ghosts. We could talk about that forever, but it doesn't really matter. And there were roaches.
That's what podcasts
are for. I slept in the van every single night for a month because the place was disgusting.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Then a voice ended up on a recording. My wife still doesn't believe that it's real, but it is. It scared me. It's exactly how it sounds. It's the very last thing on that EP. Like, there's like that ambient, you know, outro song, whatever. And John does some like talking, and then it like kind of trails off. And the very last thing is the voice that ended up on the recording. That's none of us. It was really weird. That really happened. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning, the witching hour.
Shoot.
Just showed up, dude.
Yeah, that was real. And then there was an old guy that lived next door that had a bunch of jalapenos in his garden, so he brought us like a 5 gallon bucket of jalapenos. Harold. Jalapeno Harold, dude.
Harold, so dude, I forgot.
When we got tired of Taco Bell, we'd eat ramen, like make a bunch of ramen. Yeah. We'd like slice up these jalapenos and put it in the ramen to church it up so it didn't feel like we were eating like ramen every day.
Dude, I forgot about Jalapeno Harold.
Yeah, it was awesome.
He's got
it
was me a dead now.
Oh, like, dude, he was like at least 108 then. He was so old.
Rest in peace. One of the things I have written down about critique and Quick as a Word, which you already answered my question, is whether you still hate that era of the band.
Cool. I mean,
hate that era.
I had seen interviews where you Andy talked a lot of shit.
I mean,
about,
like, the being in the band and hanging out
or
and touring
hate that music
might have been the funnest time of the band because we're all just young and not angry yet and. So we probably had a good time, but musically, I think those are bad. Blake probably likes them a little more because they're like,
my
vocals are really
right
bad. The lyrics are really bad.
The recordings are bad.
Recordings are awful.
No, I don't hate that era, but I definitely am a little embarrassed about the music side of it. Like, we were just, I don't know, we just were really into different bands at the time than we ended up liking a lot more later. Other bands we liked a lot more later, but
we
didn't know, like, Aaron and I like pretty much wrote everything. Aaron and I did, and when we started the band, neither of us
debatable. I might have wrote it all.
Andy wrote pretty much everything
once we started getting good,
but seriously, like, Aaron and I didn't know how to play like heavy music. Like, all we knew is that Showdown and Dragon Force and X-Toll were like cool, and we loved those bands, and like, dude, let's try to figure out how to play this kind of music. Like, I don't think I even had like a heavy amp at the time. I was trying to figure out what a heavy band was, kind of. And so that's what just kind of came out of us, is that crap, because we had never done it before.
Just the shredding.
Yeah. And I wanted to harmonize everything because I just loved it, but it was so overkill. But yeah, it's definitely the least favorite musical era for the band for me.
They came from the hills on the run to the mountains. They swore they marked in the shroud of the rain.
But yeah, we had a lot of fun on tour.
Best tours of that era?
Yeah. Oh, well, as far as like...
Not numbers or like success.
Yeah. Well, I was asking like, what were your favorite tours of that era? Because that is one thing clearly that you guys are very known for, is the wild amount of touring that you did.
Blood Comes Cleansing, for sure.
Burden of a Day.
Burden of a Day was really fun to tour with.
Gwen Stacy a couple times was really fun.
And Once Nothing, we kind of cut our teeth with them. So it was kind of like, it was like every other tour we were with one of those bands. Just because we were all trying to do the same thing, like get off the ground and tour.
We were all right about the same like level of success at that time. So like we all just bounced from each other's tour and like co-headline. And like, you know, we were probably, of all those groups, still always a little bit smaller than any of them. So we'd be supporting them. But man, it was a good time.
That's weird because out of all the bands you just mentioned, in my head, you guys were bigger than all of them at that point in time.
We felt like we lasted longer than all those bands.
Yeah, I think they were, at the time, they pulled more people for sure at shows like most of those bands did. Yeah. I think.
Like at the end of the day, I don't know. At this point, maybe we've sold more or comparable records to some of them, but
I have no idea.
That's all numbers. Who knows?
But it's like, you're talking such a small difference level. Yeah. Like, they pulled 10 more kids at that show, and it felt like a whole lot more people than 10 kids. You know, so like, it's
also
hard to gauge.
Because no kids ever sing along to Plea songs, and everybody sings along to everybody else's songs. Yeah. So it feels like those bands are huge.
Dude, with Blood Comes Cleansing felt huge, because they would have like pylons like every song, like doing these like vocal breaks. I remember thinking like, holy crap, if we could have got like half that response, be so pumped, you know? But,
Well, then you stopped shredding, and then it happened.
You
got the pylons.
Happened more, probably.
But Malevolence, I remember I got Malevolence at a Newbury Comics the week that I was sick in college, and I was home, and my stepmom went out and bought it for me to make me feel better, because I really wanted it.
Dang.
That's funny.
It was sick. I love that record. I'm really bummed that I don't have that record on vinyl. What?
It's a, I mean, it's okay. It's good.
It's great.
I got a copy. I can give you a copy of it on vinyl,
Sick.
It's one of Blake's copies.
You can have it.
I remember I messaged Aaron during the recording of that on MySpace, like, because he was just bored after he did his parts. And
oh, that's
so
awesome.
I just, like, he, I remember, I mean, we were MySpace friends, but that obviously didn't mean anything. But
MySpace
MySpace is great, dude. And he just like put out a bulletin, just like, somebody messaged me a board, and I did, and we talked for like the whole rest of that.
I would love to see those messages.
I just wanted to know. I thought that was the first time I like ever talked to a dude in a band that I liked, like on a level where they like, you know, like not just like a fan, I suppose. And so I thought that was the coolest shit that like ever
That's
happened
cool.
to me at the time.
That's awesome.
Aaron's
I wish
always
we still
been
had a
friendly.
MySpace.
Oh, dude, MySpace is so
Dang.
Great.
These are whiskey smashes.
Ooh.
And what you got to do Dang. Is each take a mint stem.
This is so
and
pro.
Like, just go ahead and smell it right now, and then put it on one hand and slap it.
Gotta tease it.
You gotta get all the oils to come out, and then rub it on your on the edge of your glass, and you guys are good to go.
Awesome.
And then I brought a beer chaser just in case.
Dude, thank you so much, man. This is awesome.
Thanks, man.
This is the best interview you've ever done.
I'm saying. This is how we get you.
Heck yeah. That's cool.
I need to start telling. I never tell people like before I do the podcast that there's great cocktails coming. I should probably use that as a
like. I've caught the vibe, like y'all are always talking about, because I've listened to a good number of these, and I figured that like that was gonna happen, but I wasn't gonna expect it. Damn. You know,
it's definitely gonna happen.
Why is that great? That's a great move. That's cool.
What do you think?
Oh, that's delicious.
Yeah, that's good.
That's what he does. Oh.
Kind of sour, I like it.
Yeah, dude.
Dang, this is fancy.
I know, dude.
I'll podcast anytime, bud.
Come back tomorrow.
Yeah, so cool. Tell me about Malevolence.
Like the song or the record?
The record, yeah. Where were you when you? Where did you make it?
So we wrote that. As far as the writing aspect, we wrote it at John's parents' house. They had a. They had built a new home on Kentucky Lake, and they had like an apartment basically downstairs.
This is where it makes it sound like we're like one of those rich kid bands.
Yeah, for sure.
But we for sure weren't.
No. We ate ramen still and ate really cheap, but we spent, I don't know, like a month or two riding Depravity at John's parents' house. Mm-hmm. And then we went to the studio in Connersville, Indiana with Joey Sturgis. Yeah, it was Connersville. Yeah. It was, yeah. So that was before he had like bought a house and made like a really cool studio spot. So he was literally recording in like a garage.
In a garage behind somebody's house that wasn't his.
Yeah, like rented it out.
Super weird.
He had like boombox speakers for like studio monitors. And I thought that was the craziest thing. But he had put out like Devil Wears Prada and sold like a million records with them, you know. So we thought his recording sounded great and was really clean. And at the time, it was kind of cutting edge for bands putting out records, like the sound.
Right.
And so we went and recorded with him in a freezing garage. Like, I remember my fingers freezing while I was trying to record. There was snow on the ground most of the time we were up there. But that was the recording aspect of it. And I think that was, I don't know, you can talk more about this, but like, I think that was the first time we purposefully like made a sound or tried to make a certain like vibe for the band. And I remember Jason telling us, like, I think this is the record that people are kind of waiting on from Plea, because it was a little darker, a little heavier. You know, we tuned down for the record, and lyrically it was a lot darker too. So it was kind of cool experience.
Like, everything, there's a purpose behind everything. Like, the whole record was like a concept pretty much, and then so the music had to match what the vibe of the lyrics were going to be, and then like the album artwork was all, it was all like, there was a, I don't want to say a product, but there was like a thing we were trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
With everything beforehand, we were just trying to write some songs. We just need to write a song, as opposed to like write a record.
We had a vision, you finally. Yeah, that was the first time I think we had an intent, like a vision for a record, for sure.
I mean, it seemed like you definitely kind of leveled up on that record when that record came out. Even just like the tours you were getting, and like everything with the band seemed to kind of take a little step up at that point.
Yeah,
I think
so.
It was a good one.
It was cool.
The shooting the record cover, like the picture on the front, was like the worst experience of my life. One of them. It was awful. It was like, it was in Ohio with Taylor Foyles was the photographer, and it was like, it had to be like 10 degrees outside for real, like below freezing, because it was like snowing and there was ice on the ground. And we got in this pond in like black suits on ties and took pictures. It was terrible.
It was awful. You could only be in there for 8 minutes, and then you had to get out and go inside, stand in front of heaters, put our clothes in dryers, warm back up. And we couldn't be in the water for longer than 8 minutes because hypothermia could cut. We had a guy there like timing us with a stopwatch.
Oh my gosh.
It's crazy.
It was rough.
It was a little weird because you guys, at least from an outsider perspective, because everything was so dark, but then obviously you had like the music video and stuff from Malevolence, you know, and like stuff in the merch and all that kind of stuff that kind of contrasted the, you know, and kind of gave the other side of you guys the part where you're silly and you're lying on a podcast and you're, you know, that kind of part of you.
I think, well, like, artistically, like, everything we're trying to do, like, message and playing, like, making art, like, the music, was really important and really serious, and we, like, tried really, really hard. But everything outside of that, it's just, like, we're not super tough dudes. We're not, like, we weren't, like, raised in the streets or whatever, you know? Like, so that whole, like, dark warehouse music video thing where every dude in every metalcore band tries to look really hard, but chances are they are from like a upper white middle class family in a suburb somewhere, you know, and mm-hmm. never had it hard. So anyway, we just didn't want to be that. So we're like, oh, we're a bunch of funny dudes that laugh all day long. So let's make everything outside of the music that.
Well, you did it
for sure.
And it worked for the most part.
It just felt really fake to do anything other than that, I think. Like, I don't know. Yeah, we wanted the music and the product and the recordings and the records to be, like, really driven by something with, like, a meaning behind it. But, man, everything else was free game just because that's what we wanted. And we felt, I don't know, for me at least personally, it felt weird to go and try to be, like, super serious in interviews and, like,
Well, that kind of set you guys apart, I think. Like, and I don't know. I mean, you guys can speak more to this than I can, but I don't know whether that kind of helped or hurt. You know, because some bands that do take their vibe seriously on all aspects, like, end up getting like super big, and sometimes they don't, and they look like super corny. You know, so right. I don't know whether. I mean, did that help or hurt you guys, do you think, over the course of the...
I think
both. For sure. Yeah.
Like, I think we got where we got because of that, for us being funny and the whole, like...
You were just you.
We were told kind of, like, shunned a little bit in the early years because of me being a fat dude and, like... Certain record labels aren't wanting to sign fat guys. Certain managers aren't. You know, that image is like a big important thing.
Yeah.
Even at how small of a level that is, it's still a product. So we just like marketed our flaws and like tried to turn them into like, yo, this is us, you know, hopefully you're into it. And so I think we got as big as we did because of the way we did things. But the band may have gotten way bigger without all that stuff, or not. Who knows? I just want to say that all these statements that I say are not like these self-deprecating cry for help things. But I have said this to Blake and all the dudes 100 times. Like, if they would have had a skinny, good-looking, like, macho dude, like a hard-ass dude, they could have probably gotten, like, gnarly big because they were fucking so great. There's a glass ceiling with being like a fat dude.
I mean, there's also a glass ceiling with being a metalcore band. You know, there was a million metalcore bands with hot lead singers that, like, you know, I mean.
But if you want me to be so real on your podcast right now, A Plea for Purging is better than, like, August Burns Red.
Oh, my. No way. I do not agree.
Blake gave me the dirtiest look. But, like, you know, we weren't going to get as big as August Burns Red because I got a bad metabolism or something.
It's the thyroid. No, dude. On a serious note, like.
Jake, I think you guys are really good, dude. I'm just kidding.
Take us on tour. We're going to have to
definitely listen to this.
Yeah.
100%.
Now, like, on a serious note, like, looking back, there's no way I could imagine doing any of what we did without any of the four main dudes, like, me, Andy, Aaron, and John. Like, and of course, we had Lyle in the beginning and Tyler, which were, like, awesome, some of our best buds in the world. But I'm glad it was us four, in hindsight, for sure. Yeah, maybe we'd have lasted another year or two, but who cares? Like, I think the experiences we had as, like, brothers, like, we're all, like, best buds. Like,
yeah.
These dudes are my brothers. I mean, they'd say the same thing, I'm sure, but...
I saw you guys touring on that record that was the first time I got to see you guys on the Scream to Prayer tour, which I know was your absolute favorite, it seemed like.
We did that on Depravity?
Yeah. Yeah, you guys were one of lower bands on the bill.
That was the year that we did, we went to Europe, came home, we did Depravity, then we did Scream to Prayer, and we were
second.
It was
at Soulfest, which was...
Corpus Christi opened.
Yeah, and then For Today totally went from third to, like, direct support in, like, 3 days of the tour because their portraits had come out and they blew up.
It wasn't that drastic, but they did.
It was
they
something
moved
like
up
that.
The, like, from, like, second.
I remember
to, like,
that, yeah. When they should have. They killed it on that tour.
They were so huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that tour is cool. I mean, like, Chris, every dude that's done that tour probably talk total shit and, like, try to scream the prayer. We just, like, oh, dude, I just want to say so many things. I hate Ash, and that's the dude that books all that stuff. But anyway, like, the tour was cool. The politics of it.
Yeah.
Were pretty rough, yeah.
It was kind of, for me at the time, that was, like, you know, the first, like, couple Scream to Prayers were, like, the best thing I could have ever asked as like a, you know, as like a Christian medical kid, that was like the best thing
it's
could
like
possibly
all your
have.
Favorite bands
it was, it literally was like, and I was at Soulfest that year. And that was also, you guys, I remember, had a huge thing at Soulfest because I think the Chariot, they wanted to charge him for meet and greet.
Oh,
and you guys ended up
that.
Talking shit
Josh
about Soulfest.
Soulfest is so bad. I'd love to talk about that. Yeah, we'll just talk about that for a second. You got to edit these things down to a certain...
it's all...
Soulfest, they... I can't remember everything, but they made some kids pay a whole bunch of extra money to meet the Chariot. The Chariot didn't ordain that or anything. Found out about it. They're also like trying to screw a bunch of bands on merch rate. That's a long story. But basically, it was just obvious that we were in a place that was marketing God's name to make some money.
Money grab for sure.
And so we talked about it super hard on the stage.
I remember.
That was probably like the beginning of us going, okay, we're going to write a record about this next, you know? We were banned from the festival and not allowed to play anymore. And then the next year, for us to get on the next Scream the Prayer, our management had to call and apologize to the festival and stuff and try to get us back on the festival because we were banned. And then when we played that year, all the people that ran the festival stood on the side of the stage and watched us play and threatened to cut the power if I said anything negative about them. And I still talked some shit about them. And we never played there again.
Well, I remember the second year. Wasn't that the year Aaron broke his ankle, right?
Yeah.
And he was playing on like a broken ankle the whole time.
Whoa. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know more about your damn band than you do.
Dude, I do remember something from that fest. Like, I had like a major argument in the tent, the money tent, like settling up.
Remember, and it got
really heated.
They weren't going to let us pay off a net, and like it wasn't in the contract. That whole thing that we always fought with people about.
Yeah.
And they held the whole entire tour package there until our band was like agreeing. And then everybody else on the tour was like, oh, yeah, we're back in plea. And
I don't remember.
We said that, oh, we had to have Eric Gregson send some fraudulent. Oh, that was funny. We had
what?
To,
no, we didn't.
We had to have Eric Gregson make some like merch invoice things in the middle of the night and email them.
Saying the costs were higher.
Saying the costs were higher and stuff. Oh, dude, that was so sick.
Yikes. Jeez.
You guys are letting it loose.
Yeah, oh, dude, that's like one out of like 100 of those instances. Oh, like,
yeah.
It was. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
We were dicks.
Well,
not really.
The merch rate thing, I get it,
dude.
It's
like
I did that.
Why would somebody tax us twice on what we've already paid for? Like, we own this merch. Like, we paid all of our merch from the beginning of the band, like up front. Which I don't know of any other band ever that has ever done that. But we did that. We paid everything up front. We just saved up, made sure we could pay off just in case that a tour bombed and we couldn't sell anything. Well, at least the merch is paid for, and we don't owe anybody after the tour. Well, it's like, so we're paying all this money to get the merch to us. It's roughly half the cost of what we're selling it for, maybe a little less. Then we get to the fest, and they want to, like, take a percentage of what we sold it for, not the net of what we actually profited. So what we would argue pretty much with every contract or every festival or every venue that wanted to take a merch cut was that, hey, let us deduct our cost out of that, and you can have a percentage of the actual profit, the net.
But here's where you get them, kids. Bands listening right now, all those contracts that say, hey, you got to give us 25% of merch, sales. It doesn't say gross sales. You could argue that in a court of law and win if you had the money to do that. But that would be the argument. I'd say if you can underline or highlight the word gross sales in this contract, I will pay you.
Yeah.
But if you can't, I'm paying you off net sales. Oh, dude, we were so smart and just tight.
Yeah, right.
That's what we got.
We made
so
some
huge
enemies with that stuff for sure.
Yeah.
Much to the dismay of our management, because he definitely had to probably give a lot more apologies than we were okay with giving.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Derek.
Yeah, Derek.
But
was
that brought us to, you already mentioned it, Marriage. Next record.
It's the heaviest.
It's pretty
Golden
heavy.
Bears is the best song we ever wrote. Andy would agree.
Blake loves that song. We had to listen to it yesterday, so you could tell me how good it was. Marriage is probably...
Is that your favorite record you
guys
wrote?
I can say... No, my favorite record to me is the last one, Life and Death. But I will say Marriage is the heaviest record that's ever been written. Say it. People think it. I'll say it out loud. It's so heavy.
I don't know what to say to that.
Blake won't say it. I will.
It was a pissed off record from pissed off dudes, and the recording. I love the way the recording sounds, but there was some really crappy stuff that happened in the recording side of that. It was just a messed up time, I think, for the band, but it ended up awesome in the end. But I like that record. I'm most proud of the last two for sure.
It was interesting because that was kind of the first time I'd ever heard like a Christian band really bring up those themes and even kind of take on the church and take on Christian doubt, you know? And I think that record and a few years prior, one of the only other times I'd heard that coming from like a Christian band is a band not in your genre, but was Me That Used Catch Rust the Foxes. Yeah. And I feel like those two records, and those two records I think were pretty influential on me in that whole realm of being able to question what I believed, you know, and question what I'd been taught, I suppose, or taught to believe, I suppose. And, so thanks guys.
Yeah.
For messing me the fuck up.
Yeah.
Well, Without you guys.
I think, you know, like Christian quotation band, it's like this safe place. You say some Christian stuff, not very doubtful, and where everything's okay because you're marketed that way, you're sold in stores that way, like, so it's...
You're rewarded for it.
Rewarded.
Yeah.
But it's like a shaky, scary ground to go outside of that and to say anything, like, publicly that is different than, yes, I believe, you know? But our whole thing, the whole reason I was in the band... Everybody maybe has different intentions, but I think we were all pretty much here that we just want to be honest before anything else, you know, like with it, like everything that we had to say. Like, I didn't want to be up there saying, like, my faith is the strongest thing in the world and praise the Lord when I'm, like, not feeling that way just to try to sell a couple hundred more records or something,
right?
You know? So we're just, I don't know, when you tour... Literally, like, the first year, we did 300 days. The next year, we did, like, 280. The next year, we did, like, 270 or 290. It was, like, always around 300 days a year for the first, like, 3 or 4 years of the band. So when you're nothing but constant, like, the industry that is, like, music and Christian music, it's going to make your brain freak out and question a lot of stuff.
Sorry to interrupt, but I wanted to tell you about our sponsors, The Sanctuary and Platoon. The Sanctuary is a Nashville-based studio that specializes in giving bands a full audiovisual experience to share with the world. Check them out at sanctuarysessions.tv for more. Platoon is a Nashville-based design studio. Platoon is able to help connect brands with their intended audiences through research, strategy, and design. Learn more at platoon.studio.
It was a crazy time. I mean, like, I'm kind of glad it's over with in a certain, you know, like, it was cool, I guess, because, but, I mean, even I, at the time, I had so many rules as to, like, what I need from a band, you know what I mean, of a certain belief system, and that I now recognize as being pretty fucked up, and if the music's good, the music's good, you know, But then it was crazy. Like, it seems like like looking back on it now, that whole entire, like, 2004 to 2010 or 11, like, Christian hardcore era is just insane to me. Like, that even happened. You know, that because it's crazy to me that it got as big as it did. You know, you had people literally lying on stage saying they were Christian just because it would get them those extra couple... 100 record sales. I knew, like, tons, or not tons, but I mean, I knew dudes and bands who would, like, switch and become a Christian band because it was, like, the cool thing to do at the time. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Jason from Face Down, like, I remember the first time or the first few conversations we had with him about putting out Marriage, and we were pretty hesitant, I think, to show him the record. We're like, man, you know, Jason may be, like, really, he may be really pissed off about it. Like, we don't know because. He had, like, some really, like, quote-unquote spirit-filled heavy bands on the label, and we're basically, like, throwing some shade a little bit at that whole scene, you know? And I think we were pretty apprehensive about it, but Jason was like right out the gate, like pumped, like so pumped. And I remember talking to him at Cornerstone right when the record came out, and we were like really nervous about showing up to Cornerstone because, you know, we're friends with all the dudes in Four Today and Sleeping Giant and all the like the kind of leaders as far as the Face Down side. And I think we were kind of nervous to show up and like wondering what kind of everybody thought, like, is everybody like pissed off at us or like, and like all those dudes were like, it's awesome, you know? Like, I remember like Tommy was like super pumped on the record, and Jason was super pumped on the record. We're like, we felt so like validated because we didn't know how anybody felt about it except for us. But I had a conversation with Jason at that Cornerstone, and Jason was like, he's like, this whole spirit-filled hardcore movement, he's like, I saw this in like the early 90s, it, like, it's already happened like this before. It, he's like, there is some legitimacy to the intent of what it is, but it always turns into something so much like worse than what it means to be, you know? And so Jason was pretty aware about the whole thing from the get-go, and so that was really cool, kind of, you know, having our eyes open to how he felt about it. And I felt like super validated about putting out that record, and I think from that point on, at least for me, I was like so pumped on that record, like putting it out. I felt like we had something real to say finally, you know, like that was cool.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like now that we're so far past it and removed, you can look back and go, were we wrong or were we right, or like, were we too critical of some people, or did it need to be said? But at least like I can just look back and go, dude, that's how I felt then. Yeah, it's cool that Jason let us like feel that way and be honest about it.
I mean, I think someone was going to say it, you know what I mean? Like, you always need a voice from the other side to kind of speak reason into what's going on, you know? I mean, even if you want to go into the Bible, that's what prophets were, you know what I mean? Andy, you're a prophet. And
prophet of rage.
Pissed off prophet.
No, but, you know, and like, I think that voice is very necessary and clearly was pretty potent at the time. Because that, again, I feel like you guys... That was those two records, I feel like, were a very big era for you guys, at least like looking in for on sure. it from the outside.
And to be 100% honest, Andy probably about to say this, but now we don't care at all about any of that stuff. Like,
oh, sure.
He talked about it on the last record too, which was 5-6 years ago now, even. But yeah, like I've heard him talk about it recently about how it's like you feel so like passionate about something and you write a record about it and you tour on it and you say it every day, and then kind of it's just in the past. Now it's just like it's not something we really care about.
Yeah.
It's like an ex-girlfriend or something. Like, it's the most important thing in your entire world is that one object or person or whatever, and like it's all you think about, and it's like you're so in love or whatever. And then you break up and like 5 years later you're like, don't remember their name, or, you know, like can't barely remember their face, or that kind of thing, you know? Like, it's just, I don't know. I'm so full. I guess it's just growing up.
Yeah.
I'm in a different headspace now, but I'm not as passionate about, I don't want people making money off selling God still, but I'm just not near as passionate about it as I was then.
It was like a cathartic thing. We did it. We put it out.
We
almost felt better about it. You know,
you saw it every day then. You know, you don't see it every day now. Like, that's not a part of your life, it seems like, anymore. But then it was, you know, that was the bands you were touring with. That was, you know, you were on tour 200 whatever days out of the year, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you can only talk about what you know.
I will say, during that record cycle, that year Scream the Prayer tour seriously might have been one of the best tours we ever did as far as, like, kids coming to shows, losing their shit, and like singing and stage diving. We went through a real cool year or two of like just being, I'd say we rival nowhere. Like, you know how like Terror is the
what is this going from?
They're like the stage dive band or Throwdown. Sorry, stage dive band. But we like were trying to be that band, dude. We wanted to be the stage dive band, dude. It was really gnarly and fun for a while. So many stages.
Yeah, it was.
I also saw you that year at Soulfest on that tour when Tyler played.
That was
a
dark feeling day, dude. I remember. But anyway, Tyler played with the Chariot.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Because Dan couldn't come back from
the... And you played Canada the Pace of the Day, right?
Yeah, like, I did on that tour. Yeah. Their guitar player, Brennan, quit like a few days into the tour. He had a lot of stuff going on at home. And Joey, who was the drummer for Once Nothing, and we had known for years and years, was drumming for them. And I remember, like, the day before Brennan quit, just happened to eat dinner with Joey. And I was like, dude, if they ever need somebody to, like, fill in on guitar, like, that'd be really fun. And they were the headliner. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, it'd be cool. You know, I didn't even really love their band, but the guys were awesome. So I was like, yeah, it'd be kind of fun. And then, like, the next day, like, Brennan quit, and Joey's like, Blake wants to play. I was like, let me on your bus right now.
Yeah, Blake got to do the same tour as us with our band, but he, like, he tried to ride with us sometimes.
I did it every other night.
But he rode with them on their, like, well, they were on a bandwagon, but
no, still, they were on a bus.
Was that a bus on
their
tour?
Yeah, that was a real deal bus, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I had to be on there the first 2 days to learn everything.
They're on a bus, and Blake just got to hang out. And
look,
just...
dude, we're drinking wine and eating steaks and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
That's awesome.
No, it was cool. The guys are awesome. And
what were some other fun tours of that era?
Blake,
what other?
Probably his favorite tours were when he got to go with Haste the Day to, like, South America and,
damn,
like,
right.
New Zealand and Australia, and we're just slumming it in America. But
we had to take, like, a couple months off because I was doing that stuff.
I didn't know that.
I can't remember what tours were. Like, I'm so bad at all, like, errors and knowing when each tour's happened. The final Haste of Day tour that we did
was sick.
Was one of the coolest tours ever.
Us. My Children, My Bride, and Cheer It.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it was so fun.
Gosh. Yeah.
A tour I liked that was before this era was... And I only think about this because you brought up Mike Recon yesterday, but Recon and For Today and Us.
That was a great tour.
That was a fun
tour. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. I like those kind of tours because, like, that had, like, Recon had, like, a real dark vibe around their band because, like, they had a lot of people fall at their shows all the time. So they were just super ignorant, heavy. And then, like, For Today, that was, like, when they were getting really into finding their way in the Christian thing and getting really, like, outspoken. So it's like weird vibes every night, you know? And, like, those kind of, I don't know, that's exciting a little bit, you know? I mean, you don't want anything, like, negative to happen, but just, oh, dude, what's going to happen tonight, you know? What's the vibe going to be in? That was cool. And everybody just on the tour was really fun.
I was about to say, everybody still hung out on that tour, even though it was, like, we were so different. Each band was so different. Like, we still, like, had a really great time. That was really cool. Yeah. I remember playing in, like, Portland or was it Portland or Seattle on that tour and the show being, like, really, really fun. In that, like, black metal club. Is that Portland?
Yeah, I think so.
Portland sounds like a place that I have a black metal club.
Yeah, it was like, named, like, Blood Clot or something. I can't remember. It was something. It was something. I remember the name, like, being, like, that sounds like a metal band name. Like, anyway, for some reason, when you brought that tour up, I remember being there that day and, like, throwing frisbee in the parking lot and stuff. That was fun. That was a good
tour. I wouldn't go into gas stations with Recon because they were all fucking thieves and they'd steal shit. And, like, not me, dude. I'm not.
Yeah. Man, you were outing everybody on this podcast.
They probably, like, nobody all agree
to dude, it. Name somebody, we'll say something crappy.
Oh, just for sure.
For sure.
That's
the end of the podcast. I'm just going to name bands I can remember that you toured with, and you're just going to talk shit.
Yeah, dude, I would love that. Like, a huge list.
Start it. Start the whole podcast like that.
Done.
Dude,
that would be awesome.
Side
Do it.
Note,
I don't give a shit.
When I moved away from Nashville, like, I moved to Nashville for, like, moved to Minnesota for 3 years, like, here a little bit ago, and I thought I was never coming back. I'd never seen any of these dickheads again. So we had a huge going away party, like 30 maybe of my favorite people were there, and I stand up on this picnic table and go through every single person that's there, pointed at their face and said all the shit that I hated about that person. You know, think of, like, your best couple friends.
Yeah.
There's something about each of them that you do not like, and you probably won't say it to them because there's, like, this social construct that we're not allowed to do that. So I was like, oh, I'm moving away. I don't care. So I stood. I said some raunchy shit.
And everybody roasted everybody.
Everybody, yeah. And everybody laughed, and I left. And I came back, and everybody's still my friend.
Sick.
God, So damn. Cool.
Well, this we'll have true. To do that at the end of the podcast. But Life and Death, that you guys have both said that's your favorite record that you did. And that obviously kind of came with like a pretty dark time for you, Andy.
I remember,
it was crazy. Unfortunately.
Weird times. But like, yeah, my mom died and all this crazy stuff. My dad died. And these dudes like were so supportive and really there. And, you know, we like did a tour like right afterwards. And like, I think everybody was trying to like make the tour. Like, yeah, well, we don't got to do the tour, but felt like it was really cathartic. Anyway, those dudes like just were there for me and basically let me like all the records, the two previous records of that, they had a real like, hey, dude, we all want to write a record about this subject or whatever, you know? So like it's my lyrics, but writing for all of us. And that record, they just let me say whatever I needed to say about anything. And so for me, that's like, I was thinking about it today because I was thinking about coming into this. That record might be like my life story, like my life up until like that time, you know, like 5 or 6 years ago, and like all the different emotions and shit and like heights of spirituality to the depths of like not believing. And so I don't know. For me, it's just the most honest art. Like if we want to get really like, you know, goofy about it, like the most honest art that I've ever done in my life and probably ever will get to do, you know? And I just think like Blake and Aaron and John wrote some like crazy gnarly stuff that's better than everyone else. How do you feel about it, Blake?
You know, you talk about going from like super extremes, like from the height of like being solid in what you think life is and your beliefs and all this, and then going to the other side and you swing to the other side, and like the extremes, like you just don't know what you believe or think, or you know, you feel completely different about what you thought you believed and all that. I think musically it was kind of like that too for us writing. Like I mean, there's like 2 or 3 acoustic songs on there and a couple like electronic like interludes, because I was really into like Thrice's Water EP and Radiohead and like Massive Attack and stuff at the time, like really electronically based like loop stuff. And so I wanted to put that stuff on the record, but I didn't know how that would fit on like a heavy record, you know? So like, but some of the heaviest riffs I think are on that record too. Like I think there's some really heavy stuff on there. So I think we did everything we wanted to do and we were super honest about it. And that's why I'm the most proud of it, is because we didn't care about anything other than putting out something that we were gonna like, that we were stoked on, and that we're gonna be honest with. I think that's why I love it.
And like we were talking yesterday about how like that record is us, like that's Blake's guitar amp and Blake's guitar and Aaron's drums, and like the two records previous to that, we did so many tricks on my vocals to like try to make me sound tough, you know, because I'm not like the strongest, like definitely not in the studio. So we did all this stuff to like try to make me beefy or whatever, and that record is just me and a microphone, this microphone, and like no, you know, whatever, adding layers and lows and highs and all that stuff. So it's just like the most real that record could be.
That was actually my guitar, my pedals through my head, my cab. And it was John's bass through his rig. It was Aaron's actual drums. That's the most us record. Yeah,
and
for
you,
sure.
You got, I mean, did you know you were going to break up? I mean, the record kind of... I mean, once the title of the record came out, I feel like everyone assumed it was
we
coming.
We hadn't broken up until after. I mean, that record was out.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess probably subconsciously everybody, like we were always really aware, like the whole, I think the reason we lasted as long as we did and like ended the way we did was like we were all super honest with each other about where we were with like liking the band and not liking the band. So it was like always a constant conversation of where are we at and are the pros higher than the cons? And I think like that was kind of, we just kept going until the scale changed, you know? And once the cons were bigger than the pros, somebody had to, like, break and say it, you know? So.
I actually saw you guys the most during that period of time because that's when I moved here in 2011. Oh, wow. So I saw you got, like, a free show with Worker at the big room in Rocketown. I saw you on the Take It Back's last tour. There was, like, some random show with Shy Allude. Yeah.
That was the tour we just had to break up on.
Was it?
Shy Allude.
We were in California, weren't we?
Yeah, that's the tour where Aaron, like, me and Aaron went to Jason's Deli. And he said, yo, dude, I'm quitting. What do you think's going to happen? I was like, oh, I guess we all quit, dude. And so me and Aaron went, those dudes went and ate Zaxby's or something. And we all got in the band. I was like, yo, we're not a band anymore. And everybody's like, whoa, it finally happened. Like, that was seriously the conversation. Like,
that's pretty much it.
It was so like,
we probably should do a final tour and like a final show. All right. Cool. Yeah.
Like it,
and we're like, don't tell anybody. We still got to go to Australia in like a month.
Yeah. We had to go do those shows first.
We have to go
but
there first.
It wasn't like apathy. It wasn't like everybody was just waiting for this thing to die. And right. They're just like, oh, but it's just we were all, I think everybody hit their like, okay, I'm content. So if it's over, it's over. And if it keeps going, cool. But it's got to be over sometime. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing.
Dude, and we had done so much more than we intended to do. Like, we started touring to kill a summer. Like, that was like the ultimate. Dude, if we can play in like another state, that would be sick. Like, we're going to do a tour. Like, that's cool. And then 7 years later,
just we kept going, dude.
Went all the, yeah, through Europe and Australia and New Zealand, all that stuff. It was like, dude, this spiraled out of control real quick. Like we did way more than we thought.
Went to other countries. We've been to like 17 or 18 countries or something. And then we, like, every state. And we put out four records, four or five, something like that. Like, that's crazy that we did all that stuff. And it wasn't, like, the plan, you know? So, finally, I mean, there is a little bit of, like, I probably had a little bit of, like, I probably would have kept going for at least another year. But, like, and, you know, I bet John would have, too, because John just loved it. Like, probably everybody would have just kept going until somebody broke, you know? Like,
we tried to punk each other out for 7 years. Well, that's how long it took.
Well, I remember, I remember at that point on Twitter, Aaron was just talking like all kinds of shit. All you guys were kind of talking all kinds of shit. I remember at that point, like that was, on every band. That was like my favorite thing.
Yeah, dark. Aaron got really dark. But it's just, it's that for me, he just don't know when to stop. It's that riding that line of like, let's be honest and really be honest and say what we think. So if that means you're going to ask me like live what I think about a certain person or whatever, I'm probably going to say it to try to be honest, but you got to try to ride the line of being honest and also cordial or like not make an ass out of yourself on the internet.
Yeah. It's really crazy,
you know? Like, but I also, I can't remember everything that Aaron said on the internet, but I would probably agree with almost everything.
The only thing I remember,
said, I just wouldn't say it.
Was at like, you guys were at some festival and you did like a scale of best bands to worst bands.
No
way.
No, it was like, I can't remember, like Black
like
Sabbath.
Wrote it?
Yeah, it was like an actual scale. And like, I mean, I'll say it because it was on the internet, but like Great Commission was on like the end of the scale, and then maybe like Black Sabbath was like at the front or Meshuggah or something. Like,
God, that's so funny.
I was just like, these guys are on one right now.
Yeah, we were on one.
Drugs. We're all on drugs now.
God, that's so funny.
I remember so much gnarly shit like this. This is why I have a podcast, because I remember all this garbage that I don't know. I don't have any trade that I'm good at. I don't have any, like I'm not good at anything but remembering useless band knowledge that'll never get me anywhere except for podcasting for free with 30-year-olds.
Yeah, so. Dude.
I like it because I have the worst memory.
Yeah.
I have a hard time remembering that stuff.
And then, I mean, when I got down here, it was, like, pretty obvious that how important you guys were to Nashville itself, you know? And I think like Mikey Rowe, and you know, he talked about it on the podcast, and I'm sure plenty of the other people I will have and have had before would say like those shows that you guys had here were some of the most like important things to happen to them, you know, going like
probably
like, it seemed like important. A real event every time you guys played here in Nashville.
Probably some of the most important stuff that happened to us. I mean, like, if you ask me some of my favorite shows, they are some of the shows here, like, because there was just a really special time for like a few years in, like, I mean, Nashville is special all around. I'm saying is regarding our band, like, there was like this weird thing right around like 06 07, like when you're talking about that whole like heightened of Christian metalcore, like it got huge here, and any like there were about 6 or 7 local bands, and our bands, any combination of those bands could play a show, and it was massive. Yeah. Like 500 to like 1300 kids, like, actually I know that's a big gap, but like it wouldn't be below 500 kids. Mm. Like, it was gnarly. And, like, nobody knows, like, why that happened. But it was insane. So, like, we were touring a whole lot, and we would play in, like, California or Arizona or, like, fucking Washington. And people would be talking about Sophia and Get Your Guns and Alert the Sky and, like, those bands, like, Alcina. Like, so how do all these people all over the country know about, like, you know, 6 Nashville bands? So it was just cool, man. Like, those shows were insane, and, like, we were really lucky to be a part of, like, what Nashville was doing then. And, like, Nashville's got a really cool thing going on now, but it's, like, completely different, a way different vibe. Like, the cool, like, intensity of, like, house shows is so sick, and, like, that thing is massive and big right now, and it's special. But, like, It's just insane that, like, we were part of some of those big shows. And, like, we weren't playing with, like, somebody huge. It was just Nashville bands.
Yeah, I don't know of any, like, local scene outside of, like, one huge band being from a city that would play that city. But, like, just a handful of local bands that really nobody cares about pulling 1,000 people and selling out a venue like Rocket Town. Like, that was really a special time, like you said. I mean, But I didn't realize it at the time. It was just like, man, we just got a lot of cool bands and all of our friends are here. Like, yeah, it's a lot of people. I mean, it was cool. Like, I was pumped every time we played. I'm not trying to play it down, but I didn't really see how, like, out of the ordinary that was until later, I think. Because that doesn't happen now in Nashville, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't know of 5 or 6 bands that could get together and pull that many people right now in Nashville just because it's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worse or better. It's just different, but... Yeah, those were fun shows.
And then you guys were always known for the tour pranks and some that ruined other bands' lives. So I wanted to hear about some of your favorites that you'd pulled. No.
I don't love any of them because I'm, like, ashamed of most of them. But, like, and maybe that I don't hear about, like, band pranking anymore. I guess that was just so, like, old, you know, that's old head shit people don't do anymore. But, like,
immature, we're,
I don't know, it was just like we were older than most of the bands that we toured with, because all of us, like, all those dudes went to college. I had already tried to do a band and it failed, and I got a job, and, like, so we're all like 3 to 6 years older than, like, every band we toured with, so we were all, like, a little bit more cranky. So bands would prank us and then we'd be like, yo, like, we don't really want to do the prank thing, so leave us alone. Boom. And we would get them back, and it would be worse. And then they'd be like, okay, don't mess with, you know. That's pretty much how it went. Everybody just knew, like, okay, like, please been around. They've pranked a lot of people. Like, they're over it. Leave them alone. And, like, then younger bands would just always try to, like, out-prank us. And basically, it always had something to do with poop.
Yeah.
Pooping on. And we pooped on people's vans, like, a lot. And then it started getting poop inside vans, and that's when it got insane, and cops, and, you know, I don't think the cops actually got called, but we're, like, banned from another festival. That was sick.
Purple Door.
Yeah. They were trying to get, like, in the Miss Lines to press charges on us and stuff.
Yeah, they called something had to do with state trooper.
Yeah, it was crazy. But Aaron... Basically, that was Aaron, really. I mean, I pooped in a bucket, but Aaron,
you helped.
I helped, but like Aaron went crazy and like smeared a bunch of poop and shit, and crazy, crazy shit inside in the Missing Lines van, ruined their van.
He mixed it with Vaseline. That was the kicker.
Oh yeah,
like, he put it inside the vents and on the dash and on the steering wheel under the seats.
But it was because they put fish inside our van and our van set for like a day because it was on an off day. Get back in our van the next day and. There was like it smelled like fish. Like
it was forever. Behind the stitching of one of the seats. Like they put it inside the seat and it just rotted.
It's really bad.
It's my row.
It's Blake's row. Gosh. But anyway, you know, whatever. We pranked some people. They pranked us. We pranked them. We
talk some crap right now if you want.
I can't remember yeah. most of the pranks, but
I don't know. Talk some shit.
It was in the midst of lions. All right,
that's for sure.
Sam was the only cool dude. Everybody else was like crying about it. Bunch of babies.
Sam's sick.
I love you, Sam.
So, I guess wrapping up, I asked everybody these last two questions, and since you've heard the podcast, which makes me feel really good that you listen to podcasts, because I used to, you know, I just, my biggest thing is whenever I love someone's music, I'm just going to fucking tell them. I think, like, it's really dumb to... You know, try to play the cool guy and not say something because, like, y'all's music meant so much to me. So it means a lot to me that you listen to the podcast. Kind of makes me nervous even talking to you, knowing that you do.
It should be.
But the first one is your biggest, like, fan moment because of the band. Like a person you got to meet or a show you got to play.
Blake got to take a picture with Ron Jeremy one time, and that's pretty crazy.
Oh, dude, that was weird.
I did too, actually.
Oh,
it dude, was weird.
I don't like talking about that because I had the weirdest feeling standing next to him. Like, I don't like talking about this kind of stuff, but like, he felt so sad. Just like, even the 3 seconds that I was standing there talking to him, I was just like, this dude is bummed at his life somehow. I don't know why I felt that way. But yeah, it was like not funny. Like immediately after I took a picture with him, like it was like, oh, it's Roger. I want to take a picture with cool. It was like, ugh, like, that sucks. That dude's gonna die with like a really messed up legacy. You know, like that's how I felt. Like to be honest, but that was cool.
I'm gonna tell you my weirdest. It's not the best way to answer the biggest fan moment, but it's kind of like a reverse fan moment. Our band was nothing, but for some reason at Cornerstone, we were like kind of something. And our shows were like massive there. So when we played there, I would kind of get a little cocky and think I was hot shit. Kids, like, I'm just being honest. Like, y'all would call me out on it, you know? But I would get in this weird festival mode too, where like I was so tired of talking to people. Like, we would get there, we'd try to set up merch. Try to handle all the business, and I was usually that guy for our band, like the business dude with venues. And so, like, I'd be trying to get all our merch set away, but kids are trying to talk to me. And so, anyway, dude, I wasn't the hugest Korn fan or anything, but I, like, love POD, you know, for, like, the early years. They were sick. We're at Cornerstone. I'm trying to set up merch. This manager dude that I don't really care for that used to, like, try to, like, get us to take bands on tour all the time came up to me and was like, hey, I have the guys in the van and they want to meet you. That's what he says. And I don't know who the guys are. But apparently at this time, he started some organization called the Whosoevers, and that's with, like, Sonny from POD and Brian Headwell from Korn. All these different people that are like famous people or whatever. But I didn't know. I don't know nothing about that. I didn't even know that existed at the time. I go to this minivan. There are these two like mall metal looking dudes in there. Like, and Sonny didn't have his dreads. So I didn't recognize who either of these dudes were. They just looked like a couple mall core kids. Not kids, but mallcore dudes. And I know all this sounds so like, that's the mindset I was in right there. So I'm just being honest. Like, I sound like a fucking asshole. But I, like, talked to these two dudes for like a minute. They're like, yo, we like your band. You guys are sick. We heard you got a new record out this week. That was when Heaven and Measures of Heaven and Hell was coming out. And I was like, that's cool, man. They're for sale over at our table for $5 or something. And like walked away. I was like, I gotta go though. And walked away. And the conversation was like 20 to 30 seconds. I walk away. John from Plea, our bass player, saw the whole thing happen. It's like, dude, that is so sick that you got to talk to fucking Head and Sonny. And my fucking heart dropped. And I was just like, no way. That's who I was just talking to. And that's who I just cool guyed and was too cool to talk to. Dude, I was bummed for the rest of the week. Like, and Sonny actually, I think, stood on the side of the stage and watched us for a minute. Like, but I never talked to either of those dudes ever again. Like, and, you know, probably it wouldn't have changed the course of the band, but what if we would have got like a POD tour or something? That would have been cool. Like, just.
That's so
funny. It's just like the most humbling thing I can think of to say that, like, I thought I was such hot shit for like at least 30 seconds that I couldn't talk to Sonny from POD. Satellite? Dude. Fuck.
It was something.
Still listen to that record. I love that record.
I was just, I got that song on my summer playlist. I was jamming at the pool yesterday.
That's cool. It was sick. I'm into it.
What's what about your biggest
fan
moment? Dude, we were backstage with Michael W. Smith at Easterfest in Australia. I got to text my dad. He's like a worship leader. And he was like, oh my gosh.
Dude, I was at a Darlene Sheck that he was at.
Do what?
I got to go to a wedding he was at.
Really?
Once.
He's got a big head. It's really weird looking. He's got a really small body and big head. He's a really nice guy. And then I helped him when I worked for American Airlines. We lost his bag, and then I had to help him, and he was really nice. So I feel bad about that. The only, like your head.
I got a Michael W. Smith story.
Yeah?
The only thing I know is I used to wear a Rockdown for like a number of years, and I was in like a back hallway, and Michael W. Smith comes down the stairs, and he goes, what are you doing back here? That's the first thing he said. It's like, what? Or like, are you supposed to be back here? What are you doing back here? And I said, I work here. And then he said, oh, thank you for your service. Or thanks for all you do.
And friends of friends forever.
And he just kept walking.
He's the best. Same. He's nice.
He's nice.
I guess.
I didn't get to meet him. He was just there. It was at a really fancy wedding in Franklin. I guess he lived next door. Like, his mansion was next door.
He just came over to see what was going on.
I didn't
on.
Know anyone at the wedding. I was invited to the wedding. I was, like, the date of somebody that was coming up from Texas. And I didn't know anybody at this wedding. And it was just in this super fancy mansion in Franklin. And I was just told Michael W. Smith was there. And I was like, oh, that's crazy.
That's sick.
It's a wild it's legend.
The time we got to meet David Ellison from Megadeth.
Ellison.
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 I always mess up his last name.
That was cool. Yeah. Dude,
yeah, he was like our PV rep. We got to go into soundcheck and like get some PV stuff and meet him. And I was like, what?
We didn't know for a while, though, I don't think. Like, wait, that's him?
Yeah.
That was cool.
I snuck into your last show, 100%, and I saw the first time I've ever seen a front-to-back side-to-side pit ever for the life. When that MIDI track came in, it was the wildest shit I've ever seen.
That show was so fun. Yeah, like, there couldn't have been a better last show ever. God, it was so sick. Like, so sick.
It was pretty sick.
And then we played Face Now Face.
How was that?
I ruined it.
It was fun. It was awesome to see like all our old friends, but John wasn't there because his wife went into labor the day before, shoot. So he had to fly back. It was pretty alarming. So like everything
like
was up in the air.
There gets a call that she's going into labor premature. We like rush him down the freeway in a Dodge Ram 1998, I think it was, and it blew up on the freeway. Get on the side of the freeway. Yeah. Call a Lyft driver and say, yo, dude, we're at this point on the side of the freeway. Pull over. Our bass player's going to get in your car and go to Tennessee. And that's what happened. And he came back. The baby's fine.
But we didn't know at the time. It was all, like, really scary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
On one hand, it was a disaster of a reunion show or whatever that was. On the other hand, it was exactly how Police should have gone out as a disaster. But hanging out with all the people
we
loved.
Was going to be no Nashville reunion show?
No.
Never.
No?
We'll never play another show.
Like, we never.
Well, we said that before.
We never, ever wanted to do it, ever. And then we just somehow ended up talking ourselves into doing this one. So
Aaron, I blame Aaron. We blame Aaron.
Yeah. Aaron was swimming, boogie boarding with Jason from Face Down, and Jason talked him into it. Then we had to go do it. But
gosh,
the friend hangs were awesome. Being with Aaron and John and Blake in a room together, like for like a few days, and all it was just like hanging out.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool that basically we got paid to like just get to go all hang out together and like be best friends again for a minute, you know.
We laughed the whole time.
Playing on stage for me wasn't that great. Like, I was talking to Blake about it, like, just that the last show was so special.
Right.
And then we just went and played some show that, like, the set wasn't anything. It would just been like, it would have been one of those shows on tour where you're like, oh man, we just played to a bunch of people, but nobody cared. You know, like, not saying like people, I'm not downplaying anybody there, that I'm sure some people cared, but it just didn't feel like, you know, that feeling right. when the show is just gnarly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But, dude, I don't regret it. It was cool. We got to go hang out.
Yeah.
Well, lastly, what are you guys most proud of?
In life.
In life or creatively, either one. Typically, people answer both questions.
It's hard to be. It's hard to be.
Mm.
Decent human being.
Yeah. Oh.
You got to go first.
Hard to be. It's hard to be. Anyway, that song's so good. Yeah, dude.
It's so good.
Dude, you've been posting about Bazan a lot lately.
He's like one of my all-time favorites.
Love it.
I've seen him 11 times.
I even love the new record. Like, I love Blanca. Is Blanca Reyes the newest one?
He just put out a new one this year called Care.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, it's cool.
Dang.
He's sick.
We're the Bazan of metal.
Yeah, that's what I'm most proud of. Dude, we are, right?
Kind of. I think I tweeted that one time.
I mean, I didn't ever say, like, come or anything in a song, but, like, we got to be the Bazan of metal, dude. That's so sick.
Those jaded dicks. Yeah.
You can call me Pedro from now on.
Dude. T.W. Walsh, I love you.
I don't know, dude. Like, I am most proud that I feel like I'm honest. This sounds just so goofy, but like, I feel like I'm fairly honest about everything I'm being honest about to everyone. Like, I try to live life with integrity. So I hope that people see that for the most part. And I hope that that's what people took away from Plea. Like, whether if we were cool or good or funny or what, if people were just like, dude, they sucked, but at least they were, like, honest and didn't lie to everybody or something, you know? Like, I'm just proud of that. And I got a cool life with a cool girlfriend. She'll be my wife one day. I'm proud of her. She's neat. Proud of, cool. I built a chopper. It's okay, but it's all torn apart right now. I'm proud of that. Blake, what are you proud of?
I think within the scope of the band, it's twofold. Like, one of lesser importance is that we like traveled the world and did some really cool things that we never really intended to do and had some experiences that like shaped who we are now and like our lives and the course of our lives that we never thought would happen. And it's all because we just wrote some crappy songs and recorded some crappy EPs. And then, you know, Jason gave us a shot and then we just every tiny little step. There was never like a big step for Plea. There was never this big break or anything like that. It was just all these tiny little things that like added up to something so much cooler than we ever thought it could be. So that's cool. But the more important thing on top of that is that the four main dudes that were in the band from the beginning to the end, we're like still like best friends, like best buds. There was no drama. There was no crappy breakup with like, you know, fights and all that crap, which you hear about that stuff like really often with bands because you live within each other's personal space for years on end, you know, especially us since we toured so much. So like it would have been easy to hate each other, but we didn't. Like we were somehow like stuck it out. That's what I'm probably most proud of as far as the band. Like the fact that like we're stoked to see each other still, like, and the fact that we got to go see Aaron to play that show was so freaking cool. And John lives in Knoxville, so we don't get to see him that often, and like being in the same room for a while, that was like the best feeling. So that's what I'm most proud of on a personal level.
Yeah, that's
I don't
so
have
rare.
A brother, and these dudes are like my brothers. Hmm. So I am most proud of that within the band for sure. In life, I'm married. I have an awesome wife. Her name's Lauren. I'm really proud of that, and I'm really proud that we all made it out alive and not hating each other and not really in debt, which is great.
You want to hear one of the coolest fights that ever happened in Plea?
Yes, absolutely.
Real early on, Blake Martin had never been to New York City. Like, you know, we're just trying to drive down the road, and John is like our dad. He, like, at this time, there are all these different eras of, like, who did what in the band and, like, responsibility. But at this time, John, and pretty much the entire time, John was the backbone of A Plea for Purging. Just did so much crap. Such a good, kind-hearted guy.
He was the moral center of the band.
And he, like, knew, like, all the mileage. And this one, we had atlases. We didn't even have, we had, like, MapQuest. There wasn't even, like, iPhones yet. And we probably didn't have a GPS. Anyway, Blake wanted to go to New York City. John was, Blake's in the back of the van, John's in the front of the van.
John's
like,
driving.
Yeah, John's driving. And Blake's like, oh, let's go to New York City. And John's like, no, we ain't got the money, and it's like way out of the way. And Blake's like, Blake knows nothing about geography. And Blake's like, come on, man, let's go. And then finally, like, Blake said something about him, I don't know, being selfish or something, just some like jab to push his button that wasn't for real.
You're about to ruin the story. Ooh. I threw the freaking atlas at him.
I was going to say that you threw the atlas.
Sorry.
But you threw the atlas. I thought you said something nasty with it too, but you threw the atlas, hit John. John's the nicest dude. And like, until this, I may have never heard John say a cuss word ever. He was like such a kind guy. And John just yells back like, fuck you, shut the fuck up or something.
He turned all the way around his seat, still driving, and pointed at me.
Fuck you. Yeah, dude, like Satan came out of John. The whole van just boop. And, like, was just like, whoa, dude. And then, like, we didn't go to New York that day.
I love you, John. He's like.
John's so sick.
I love him. He's like my big brother. I love him. Yeah. He's just the best. He's just the nicest dude. You can never see him doing something like that.
Shout out to Patrick Atkins Wand.
Yeah, boy.
The new baby plea.
Well, thank you guys for doing this. It means a lot that you want to be on the podcast. It means a lot that you listen to the podcast.
That's cool.
I remember one of the... Yeah, well, we played it... my band Overwatcher played at that 70s house once, and you were there. And we had met before and hung out when I was with the Chariot and stuff. But I remember you were watching us, and it was just like... I just had this moment of like, Andy from Plea is watching my band right now. Like, you know, like I would have lost it, you know, like if this would have happened, you know. It was just such a cool experience. And
it was sick. You guys were good. Well, thank you. I thought it was neat.
But it just means
you dance around so great, and like you feel the vibe, dude.
Well, I model myself after the sassy singer in the Love Boys video. Sure. I watched the video. That's the one I picked.
So, you gotta pick one. You'll get somewhere if you do.
Well, dudes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can cut it, Kyle.
Big thanks to Andy and Blake for coming in and hanging out and drinking beers and cocktails. Thank you to Kyle at the Tiny Tape Room for being so flexible and awesome with the scheduling and producing and opening up his home. And thank you to Charles Appletoon for the logo and branding, to Lucas at the Sanctuary for all the film business, and thank you for listening. Be a fan of your friends and love one another.